Okay, everyone. So, good afternoon. My name is Rashida Brown. I recently completed my MPH at the Rutgers School of Public Health in New Jersey. Right now, I'm working in the biotech industry in Palo Alto, and future interest in pursuing my PhD in social epidemiology. Before I get started, I wanted to acknowledge the contributions of my co-authors, Sabrina Chase, Hannah Hamdi, and Sandra Echeverry, who could not be here today. And I'm going to start my presentation discussing the R-Mix methods analysis of walking behavior among African American adults living in a low-income setting in Newark, New Jersey. And as was stated before, I don't have any financial disclosures. So as we know, physical inactivity is a growing concern in the United States. And increasing the frequency and duration of physical activity, which is one of the most common forms of aerobic activity, increasing the frequency and duration of walking, which is the most common form of physical activity, is an easy way to meet the recommendations for aerobic activity. In the United States, more than 65% of the population is either overweight or obese, and disparities have been reported across socioeconomic status and race ethnicity. Specifically among African American adults, they tend to report higher rates of obesity and lower levels of physical activity compared to other racial and ethnic groups. Another issue facing this community are neighborhood contextual factors, such as the built and social environment, which have been reported to influence health-related behaviors and health outcomes. And this relation is a particular concern in low-income settings where violence is ubiquitous and resources are scarce. So in this study, we wanted to bring light to the unique experience of African-American adults living in low-income settings, and we used a mixed methods approach to explore our aims. Our first aim was to examine the attitudes toward the community, physical activity, and use of outdoor spaces. Next, we wanted to assess how neighborhood perception is shaped by the interaction among neighbors. And finally, we wanted to examine the association of neighborhood features and walking behavior. So the Newark Community Survey was conducted in 2009. It was a small door-to-door household survey with randomly selected homes. And the homes were within a one-mile radius of a recently developed park, or a 20-minute walk, relatively speaking. And for our study, we used a sample of persons who self-identified as either Black or African American, which ended up being about 95 persons. And the survey included questions about perceptions of the neighborhood using validated scales for safety, violence, social cohesion, and the walking environment. And we kept these scales in their continuous form. Another factor that we examined was the extent of social isolation, and we looked at this based on the number of neighbors that the participants said that they spoke to or visited within the last 2 weeks, or visit regularly every 2 weeks. We created a dichotomous variable and based on the median value that was reported. We also looked at self-reporting walking, and we assessed this using the International Physical Activity Questionnaire, and we used this to calculate metabolic equivalence of walking in the sample. What we found, however, was that these data were not normally distributed, so we used log transformation for our multivariate models. So for our quantitative methods, we used generalized linear models to assess the association of each neighborhood scale with the extent of isolation from neighbors. We also used a log-transformed multivariate linear regression to assess how neighborhood built and social features pattern walking. And then for the purpose of this presentation, we didn't report the beta coefficients because with the log transformation, it wouldn't be very intuitive. So instead, we chose to report geometric means, which examine the percent change in walking per unit increase in each individual scale. Our multivariate models also included age, gender, income, education, employment, car ownership, self-rated health status, and asthma. For our qualitative methods, we had one focus group with 8 participants, and we also conducted 3 individual in-depth interviews to develop a more detailed understanding of the relationship between neighborhoods and walking. The participants of the study were recruited from the same neighborhoods as the quantitative survey participants, and they were recruited using flyers and word of mouth. The interviewer, there was only one interviewer, used a semi-structured interview guide, and the discussions were recorded and transcribed verbatim. The topics that we chose to ask questions about or to probe about were neighborhood perception and its change over time, the nature and frequency of contact with neighbors, physical activity and use of local parks, and the perception of walking as a viable form of exercise. To code and sequence, we used an iterative process to develop a coding template, and we used this coding template to examine the major themes and sub-themes that emerged from the discussions, and also we used our qualitative results to help contextualize the results from our quantitative analysis. So here are some of the population characteristics from the New York Community Survey in 2009. Again, our sample had 95 African American adults for the survey section. And the mean age among our participants was 37 years, and 84% were women. Only 32% were employed, 60% had an annual income of less than $12,000 in 2008, 18% of respondents had less than high school education, 33% owned a car, and 43% had self-reported excellent or very good health. So in this table here, we are looking at the bivariate association between perceived neighborhood features, which again was kept continuous, versus the extent of contact with neighbors. And what we wanted to look at here was how the contact with neighbor, how the frequency of contact with neighbors shaped your perception of the neighborhood. And so we are looking at the differences in means between the groups for each neighborhood scales. And we see here that for the for persons who had higher contact with neighbors, they had a better perception of safety in their neighborhood compared to persons who spoke to fewer than two neighbors regularly. And this was statistically significant. And the same can be said for the social cohesion scale, where the mean among persons who had more frequent contact with neighbors was higher than those with fewer contacts with neighbors. For violence and the walking, perception of neighborhood violence and perception of the walking environment, the findings were not statistically significant. So this is the results of our multivariate linear regression using the log transformed outcome of metabolic equivalence of weekly walking. On the y-axis, we have here the geometric mean, or the percent changes I described previously of walking. And I have here in various bars within the graph the different models that we use to assess each exposure. And the exposures for us, we looked at the neighborhood scales. So the bar on the furthest left describes the unadjusted association. The second bar was our first model, where we have the exposure of interest, which was the neighborhood scale, and also the covariates that I described previously, age, sex, employment status, and so on and so forth. The final model, we mutually adjusted for the remaining neighborhood scales, in addition to the exposure of interest and the covariates that were stated before. So with regard to our statistically significant findings, for neighborhood safety, per unit increase in perceived neighborhood safety, there was an 11.8% decrease in walking after adjustment for the covariates, age, gender, income, education, all of those, and mutually adjusting for the walking environment, social cohesion, and contact with neighbors. Conversely, with the walking environment, per unit increase in the perception of the walking environment, there was an 8.7% increase in walking behavior, and this is after adjustment for the confounders and also for the for safety, social cohesion, and contact with neighbors. We found that the results for social cohesion were negligible, mostly hovering around null, and for contact with neighbors, while they see when you compare the low versus high, they were not while they seem apparent, but they're not statistically significant. So for our qualitative results, here in Table 3, we are describing the major themes and sub-themes about the neighborhood features that were identified by the participants. One of the major themes that came up was neighborhood change, and they were either describing an improvement or a worsening of the neighborhood environment, and a lot of the participants, they used the Newark riots. I don't know if many are familiar with that, the Newark riots, as a historical time point that they compare to. There's also consensus around the level of violence in the community, and discussions of shootings and other violent crimes such as robberies were discussed at length in the focus groups and in-depth interviews. While some participants seem to have a strong commitment to the neighborhood, others still cited difficulties in developing relationships with neighbors, and there were also calls for more participation among neighbors and a call for better resources for physical activity and just neighborhood, for other neighborhood things. Now, with regard to feelings about exercise, most of the participants, when we asked them about adult and family exercise, they described the types of activities that they engage in that they felt constituted as exercise. They also discussed the differences between activity levels between men and women, and the types of activity that they engage in with their children. There was an extensive discussion about the recently developed park and how that helped to shape the growing social cohesion in the neighborhood, and they cited some limitations in that additional security would be needed to help promote activity there. So some of the representative statements that came out of the qualitative analysis with regard to neighborhood violence, one person noted that they built parks and recreational centers, but in reality it didn't change anything. People were still being robbed, killed, and jumped. When we spoke to them about talking to neighbors, one resident explained that they didn't want to say hi, how are you, or how are you doing, because they were concerned about receiving an attitude on the other end from the person, and they just felt like it was better for them to not say anything at all. And with regard to the use of outdoor spaces, participants expressed an appreciation for the newly developed park, and that there are a variety of sports going on there, such as football, soccer, jogging, and track and field. So overall, our results show that neighborhood violence and safety shape the perception of the neighborhood and interaction among neighbors. Further, having a positive perception of the neighborhood walking environment was significantly associated with increased walking. However, having a positive perception of neighborhood safety was associated with decreased walking. One explanation for this discordance in neighborhood safety could be the way in which walking was measured and described to participants in the survey. They were asked to report the total walking that they do in their week, not simply walking in their neighborhood. So this walking could be walking for transport, walking in their occupation, and these things may not be occurring within the neighborhood itself and thus may not be affected by the actual safety of the neighborhood. Nevertheless, our qualitative results highlighted that walking was described as a viable form of physical activity that contributed to positive public health outcomes. So our study was able to use both qualitative and quantitative data to highlight motivations and constraints for walking in a hard-to-reach population. We saw consistent findings across these two research methods, which helped to bolster the relationship between neighborhoods and physical activities. And our results examined the unique challenges for obtaining the recommendations for aerobic physical activity among African American adults living in a high poverty setting. The study is not without limitations, though. So one of them is that this is cross-sectional and thus causal inferences cannot be obtained from our results. Second, both the qualitative and quantitative analyses had a small sample size, which may have contributed to type 2 error. And last, the measures of neighborhood features and walking were subjective and may also be subject to recall bias. We would like to thank the study participants for their time and willingness to share their stories with us. We also thank the following community groups, institutions, and individuals for making this work possible, such as Parks for People in Newark, New Jersey, the Newark Housing Manager's Office, Rutgers School of Nursing, and Dr. Dula Pacquiao. References. And thank you.